You ready?
This is the Mike Salk Show, serviced by Jaffco Plumbing and Sewer.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
Are you ready?
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Are you ready for a good day?
Good morning, everybody. Mike Salk Show, 710 ESPN Seattle, 710sports.com as well. Hello. How's everybody doing today? Everyone ready?
Good morning, good sir.
What's up? I kind of like seeing how everybody is. Kind of take stock of where everybody's at this morning. Poor Justin was down and out for the count yesterday, battling back from a floater.
It's weird.
Those are the worst, man.
I mean, it happens to me, I don't know, a few times a year, and just last night happened to be one of them.
Yeah. All right. Well, good to have you back. I'm glad you're alive and breathing and doing well.
Mm-hmm.
We got Kraken tonight. I'm going to be going, heading to the state, or I guess at the arena again tonight. Looking forward to that.
Sharks?
Sharks in town. Yeah, I had one of those situations with my daughter. So my daughter's afraid of sharks, right? So, like, really afraid of sharks, but not, like, in the ocean.
Okay.
More like in the shower. So I can't, like, fully explain the whole thing other than to say she's got, like, a legitimate phobia about shower sharks that, you know, may come through either the drain or the nozzle. I don't know where they're going to come from.
Okay.
And then, you know, we went swimming in Hawaii. No issue with sharks. Like, jump right into the ocean. Meanwhile, I'm like, oh, we're going in there. Sharks around. Like, I get nervous about sharks in the ocean. She gets nervous about sharks in the shower. So I told her that I was going to the game tonight. And she's like, who are they playing? I tell her, she's like, I don't like the sharks. I'm like, yeah. She's like, yeah, I don't feel good about that. I'm like, but you're good, like, with the Kraken? Like, if you're in the ocean, who do you want to meet first? You want to meet a shark, or do you want to meet a Kraken? Like, a mythical, like, figure from the deep with those long tentacles? I don't know. I mean, neither sounds good, but who do you, people occasionally beat a shark, right? They use their surfboard and they beat it away.
Usually, if you
meet
a shark, you're closer to the surface too. So, yeah, I'm going to take that as a helpful.
Well, I mean, do you know a lot of people that have encountered a Kraken? Because it's mythical, right?
I don't know, like, a ton. I can't say, like, I can't list friends of mine necessarily that have had issues with specific Kraken in the deep. Davy Jones seems very sweet. I know that. Their little 4-month-old husky. He seems like a good guy. So, I don't know. It seems better than sharks. I've never met a cute shark that I wanted to hang out with, even a small one. Yeah.
Oh, really? I've seen a baby shark. They're kind of cute.
No, I'm out. I'm out on all sharks. It's like snakes. Like, I don't care how young they are, how cute you think they are. I'm pretty well out on that. All right. We got a ton going on today. I'm pretty excited for Dean Blandino is going to join us at 9 o'clock. NFL officials are one of those, like, kind of groups of people that exist in this, like, we all know who they all are. And some people are upset about the fact that we know who they are, but I kind of love it. And in fact, I kind of feel like the NFL, like the next crop of officials here in the last, it feels like it's turned over, what, in the last like 3 to 5 years, a lot of the big name, quote unquote, officials have retired and kind of moved up into the media. Because I felt like every week I always knew who the official was, right? Obviously, Ed Hockley and Gene Steratore and Mike Carey and Greer. And like, you kind of knew who every one of those guys were. And like, you know, what to expect from the Jeff Triplett, right? So there were so many of those guys. And every week you're like, okay, I recognize this person. And I kind of appreciated that little extra element of familiarity in the game. And now, I don't know, it seems like the next crop is a little bit more faceless. I don't know if they have a little bit less personality or if it's just going to take more time for me to get to know who all of them are. But I don't know, I always kind of like that element of the NFL. So we'll see. We'll see what Dean Blandino has to say. We do have some good reviews coming in recently on the podcast page. Wanted to update you on that, which is good. Yes, thank you to everybody for going over with a little 5-star review. We're still at 4.6. We're trying to get up to 4.7. That's our recent goal here. But we got some nice things. Somebody says, my favorite podcast. I've always been a Spotify listener, but recently I came here. I am the rare soul who actually loves listening to and agrees with Salk. Maura and Justin are great additions to this show as well. The show makes for a 3+ hour listen go by in a heartbeat. Thank you all for making such an enjoyable and informative show. How about that from Colby?
Go by in a heartbeat?
Yeah, like it goes quickly. Not B-U-Y, just B-Y.
Okay.
Yeah, no, like it makes it go quickly, I think he means. Thank you, Colby, yes. B-36. We appreciate that. For whatever reason, my page here isn't refreshing. So I can't. I had another couple good ones that I'll read you. So I'll have to maybe come back to that a little bit later in the show. I got into a little fight with Brock yesterday.
What?
Yeah, it's funny. It was
lover's quarrel?
A little bit. It was a little old school. Like Brock and I generally over the last few years, and maybe it was one of the reasons the show kind of had to come to an end at some point, was like, we've kind of like, I don't know, convinced each other of all the things, at least sports-wise, that like we used to argue about. There's a couple little potholes that occasionally we'll fall into when it comes to like paying players in college or a few other things. But like, you know, they're now basically doing that. So that fight's pretty well over. There's not a ton left to argue about there. And unless like we start talking about COVID or politics or something like that, there's not like a ton of room for me and Brock to really like fight. And generally, I just sort of ignore him when he sends me political things. I'm just like, yeah, I don't want to talk about that. So I just don't write back or whatever. And so when we got into it yesterday on Jamal Adams, of all things, it was a little surprising, and I think I kind of overreacted. I gave him a little whatever, dude. Like, don't whatever, dude, me. And so, like, yeah, we kind of squabbled a little bit. I think we've patched it up, and everything should be okay. But it's interesting listening to, and we'll talk about this, he and Matt and some others, like, some of the frustration that they seem to have with Jamal Adams, and I keep coming back to the fact that as you're looking to hire a defensive coordinator, shouldn't he be one of the great assets? And instead, it feels at times like he's the thing that defensive coordinator is going to have to cover up. And I hope that's not the case. You spent two first-round picks for him, and one of them is now the number 10 pick in the draft, right? And could have been arguably higher. Thankfully, you end up winning a couple games late in the season. But, I mean, this really could have been it's a top 10 pick. Then you paid him. So he's going to be here for a while. It's not a Bobby situation where you're like, oh, you got so much value from this guy over all the years. He's such a wonderful player. But now, unfortunately, it's finally the time, right, where you're not getting the same value. But you can cut him because of the way you structured that kind of a contract. Can't cut him. You can't cut Jamal Adams if he's really such a problem. But yet you look at it, and just like at the end of the year, they were arguably the same, if not better, with Cody Barton in there instead of Bobby Wagner for 2 weeks. Did things change drastically when Ryan Neal or even, what was the other guy's name, Jones, stepped in for Jamal Adams at the end of the season? Not really. And instead, you're paying the guys the highest paid safety in the game. So I don't want that to be the case. The Seahawks have spent a tremendous amount of resources, including money, on Jamal Adams, right? That's a given. Yeah. Put that in the bank. The Seahawks also are not forcing turnovers and getting takeaways at the rate necessary to be a great team, a great defense, or really a type of team that Pete Carroll wants them to be. Those two, there should be a meeting in the middle of those two issues, right? You've paid Jamal Adams and you need turnovers. Somehow, whoever this next defensive coordinator is, and I know there's more names kind of being added to the list, which I think is a good thing, the priority needs to be finding a way to get those two things to match up and work in your favor instead of working against you. Jamal Adams needs to turn into Troy Polamalu. He needs to turn into a turnover machine. He needs to turn into somebody. And Pete's had so much great success with safeties over the years, right? Whether it's Troy Polamalu at USC or obviously Cam Chancellor and Earl Thomas here or Lawyer Malloy even, I think, back in his day. I mean, Pete's always been a guy who knows how to get the most out of that position. And when used right, that can be one of the most important positions on the field because of Pete's mantra of it's all about the ball. That's a position that should cause and force turnovers. Well, Jamal Adams needs to be that guy, right? Yeah, he brings the juice. Yeah, he brings the ability to hit. Yeah, he can come up in the box. But when he does those things, he's got to do them. And we just talked, remember all the conversations a few years ago? Seahawks got to get a Mark Barron type from the Rams and all these sort of undersized linebacker hybrid safeties and all the damage that they were able to do. Well, Jamal Adams should be better than any of them. He should be the best of that group. And maybe the league has sort of gone away from that and started doing some other things. Well, good. That should give you an opportunity to do something different, right? Find a way to use this guy in such a fashion as to surprise the league. That's why I think people are so interested in creativity out of their next defensive coach. Finding ways to use a player and a resource like Jamal Adams in such a way as to surprise the rest of the league. So hopefully that's something they can do. I'll talk to Brock coming up at 7:45 more about this. We got a bunch of other people stopping by the show today. Shannon Dreher, we got some great news when it comes to the Mariners. In fact, I'll tell you all about that in everything else you need to know. We'll do it next. Mike Salk Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
This is the Mike Salk Show.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio. Back in mornings from 6 to 10.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
Whew. Yeah. Stacy has the heater on over here. It's warm. Getting toasty
over
here.
It's not frigid like normal.
It's like 50 degrees out, and I'm like sweating like a pig in here because it's getting warm here. Trust me.
Careful what you asked for. You were saying how cold it was.
Well, that was, no, hold on. That was when it was like 20 degrees out. We were experiencing record cold temperatures, and there's no heat in this room, so we needed a heater. I don't know whether that was like out of nowhere, but now that we're sort of out of the dredges of that cold weather spurt, I don't know that we need the same level of heat just blasting over here directly on me while I'm trying to do a show, which generally makes me sweat anyway. Plus, you know what? I'm done with both you guys. You guys kind of guilted me yesterday. Yeah, a little bit. We were talking about the juice cleanse and all that, and you guys kind of guilted me, and so I looked at the scale last night, which I probably shouldn't have done.
How are you blaming me?
Our fault.
I don't know,
because we were talking about it, and I was like, oh, I should really get on the scale. Because I was saying yesterday, the problem is once you've kind of gone through a gluttonous period, like over the holidays, you kind of get that, like, I should get on the scale, but then, like, if I get on it and it's not as bad as I think it is, I'm probably not going to keep dieting the way I need to. It's like, ah, everything's fine. And if it's worse, then it's just depressing. And it was definitely on the worse side. So it was a rough evening.
You told us this yesterday, and I don't think either of us encouraged you or discouraged you either way.
Yeah, it was your look. Nope. I would say it was kind of the look that you gave and the kind of the way it made me feel.
You felt judged?
Yeah, I felt a little judged, and okay. So I jumped on last night. And
I'll work on my face.
Thank you, and I feel a little bit worse now. Work on your face, please, because I feel even worse about myself. It's time for Need to Know.
Need to Know.
15 minutes past every hour with Mike Salk.
Here's what you need to know. Up first.
Here's what I love about the Seahawks search for a defensive coordinator. It keeps expanding. I like that. They're adding more names to the list. Yesterday, they included Cowboys secondary coach Joe Witt Jr., who's got some experience under Dan Quinn, crossed paths with John Schneider in Green Bay as well. 43 years old, he's been all over the league in recent years. Add his name to candidates like Ed Donatell, Clint Hurt, Sean Desai, plus some names that just make sense. Marquand Manuel, Gus Bradley among them. It sounded like there was at least some momentum towards Donatell, but I think the addition of more names tells me they're at least open to finding the best candidate, not just the most familiar one. I think that's a good thing, much more in line with the mantra of competing every day. Now, as for Jamal Adams, is he an advantage or a hindrance? It's amazing how down on Adams, Brock, and Matt Hasselbeck, and others seem to be. How could an all-pro safety be that bad so soon after having so much success? Especially when he hasn't gotten old, slowed down, or shut it down. I just don't quite get it. Like, was it truly the worst move ever made? If they're right about him and the amount of resources given up, then maybe it is. But someone can get him back on track. That's got to be the hope, and it should make a monster difference for this team. We've mentioned that the new defense coordinator has to have a plan for Jamal Adams. I'm just not sure I've properly stressed the importance of that actually happening.
Here's the second thing you need to know.
Well, we knew the Mariners would be well represented once again when Baseball America came out with its top 100 prospect list. And yes, that was the case. Finished with five players on the list, two in the top 12, and one in the top two. No surprise, Julio Rodriguez has named the number two prospect in the entire game, just behind a catcher from the Orioles. Sounds like he was in the running, too, for number one. The kid from Baltimore must be pretty, pretty good, because the excitement around Julio Rodriguez has been palpable.
Top prospects in Major League Baseball. Julio Rodriguez into stand in here to try and drive the run in. And boy, is that one hit! Long, long gone! Julio Rodriguez, a no-doubter! Two-run homer for the Dominican Republic. Julio Rodriguez absolutely crushed it.
Yeah, he did. He's risen up these rankings past couple of years, now sits perched right near the top. Remember, should get a chance to see him at the big league level this year. Pitcher George Kirby ranks 12th. Top pitcher in the farm system. He's got ace-type stuff. Don't sleep on young infielder Nuevi Marte. He checks in at number 18. Yes, that makes three of the top 20. Matt Brash, number 45. Brandon Williamson, 83rd. Puts three pitchers from their AA rotation on this list, with Emerson Hancock presumably not too far off, nor was young catcher Harry Ford. Remember, wasn't that long ago this system produced zero top 100 talents in a season. Zero. They now have five, plus recent graduates Jared Kelnick and Logan Gilbert already at the big league level. That is how you turn around an organization. Now just go spend a little money, bring in the top talent to complement these young kids.
Here's the third thing you need to know.
Well, we've known for a while the NHL players would not be going to the Olympics. Now we know they're going to be doing that planned break in what they'll be doing during the planned break in February, playing makeup games from the postponements that were over the holidays. Kraken had their games rescheduled. Most of them will now take place in February. So if you're a season ticket holder, check your new schedule. In the meantime, 1-0 since getting a team dog, Davy Jones, their 4-month-old Husky mix, has been good luck so far. He'll hopefully be on hand as his team tries to win 2 in a row. They host San Jose tonight. Sharks currently sitting in the middle of the Pacific Division pack. NBA highlights from last night. It's got to start with Joel Embiid. Drops 50, but did it in just 27 minutes, as the Sixers crushed the Magic. A really good night for Kyrie Irving. He puts up 30 in a win over Brooklyn, in a win for Brooklyn over Washington. Heat over the Blazers. Normal 30-point night for DeMar DeRozan as the Bulls top the Cavs. Milwaukee beats Memphis, and the Pacers embarrass the Lakers in L.A. There you go. It's everything you need to know, and I only made, like, 7 mistakes in reading over the course of 5 minutes. How about that?
I like your Sharks in the middle of the Pacific. It threw me for a quick second there.
Not
like,
the Pacific Ocean. No, the Pacific Division. Yes.
That's funny, though.
The Sharks are everywhere.
I had a thought. Yesterday, we were talking to Michael Bumpus, and he said that the coach in Cleveland, who I'm spacing on his name right now, treated OBJ like the new car or the fancy car he didn't know how to work on.
Stefanski,
okay. He said it was drive. He was like, oh, I don't know what to do with this. Is that kind of the way you want the new DC to come in? Is like, yep, that's the car I've been looking for. That's the car I've wanted. That's my dream.
I think that's the perfect analogy. Like, yep, I see Jamal Adams as somebody who can do X, Y, and Z. And if I have that in my scheme, we can do A, B, and C, right?
Yeah.
Isn't that kind of what you're looking for? Somebody who's got a plan for him right away comes in and says, oh, you know what I love about this? You've got Jamal Adams, and here's the way I want to use him.
Mm-hmm.
For sure. And maybe that means working with him on some things or moving him into some different situations or finding ways. I don't know. But somebody's got to use this guy creatively because he's talented. He's athletic. He can hit. He's got energy. He can be a game changer for you if you find the right way to do it and minimize some of the things he does not as well, right? Some of the weaknesses that he has, because obviously he's not a perfect player. So how do you find a way to take advantage of the good, minimize the bad? And if you can do that, gosh, that's coaching, man. That's why coaching staffs exist, to get the most out of their players.
And you would hope that he's willing to take whatever that is, too, because he probably got a good idea of what he's good at.
Yeah, I would hope, but, you know, any of these guys, whoever, I would hope that Jamal Adams is willing to take some of that coaching and realize that these last two seasons haven't gone the way he's planned, and that he's in danger of sort of, you know, falling out of favor in NFL circles, right? Eventually, they'll sort of just look at you differently. Well, there's an opportunity, so I would hope that he's very coachable and amenable, and I would hope that the next coach, whomever it is, has been looking at this guy going, I know just what I want to do with him. I've got the perfect plan for him, right? And I know why, you know, the quarterbacks that we talk to, whether it's Brock or Matt or whomever, maybe they see some of the deficiencies in coverage and they kind of lick their chops. Okay, well, hopefully there's a defensive coordinator out there looking and seeing something else out of the safety position, not the way the quarterback views it, and saying, all right, well, I can limit some of that, and here's how I'm going to take advantage and use it for our team. Yeah. Who were the top athletes of 2021? Don't forget, you can help the Seattle Sports Commission choose the Sports Stars and Stories of the Year. Vote for the 87th Annual Sports Star of the Year Awards. Find info about voting on the May event at 710sports.com/events. All right, coming up next, Matt Hasselbeck. I mentioned some of his thoughts on Jamal Adams. We had a lot to talk about yesterday. Certainly getting into some of these playoff teams and what he's seen so far and what the Seahawks should be looking to do next. We'll talk to Matt Hasselbeck. Coming up, don't go anywhere. Mike Salk Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
The Matt Hasselbeck Show, presented by Infinity of Bellevue and Linwood. Seahawks legend Matt Hasselbeck takes you inside the Seahawks and the NFL for a full hour, exclusively on the Mike Salk Show.
Hello, Matt.
What's happening?
How we doing, man?
Great.
Wild card weekend in the books. Extra long.
Super, super wild card weekend.
Yeah, it kind of wasn't, though. It was kind of a lame wild card weekend, I gotta say.
A lot of blowouts, yeah.
I mean, 4 out of 6 blowouts, and even the other two, I mean, they were good games. They weren't great games. I mean, the end of the Dallas game was fun, but it was just you think that's just A, having the number 7 seeds, and B, making the number 2s play on that weekend?
Probably a little bit of that. There's some good teams out there, too, though. I mean, there's some teams with hot quarterbacks right now. There's some teams that have found their way running the ball, and then there's some teams that, like you said, you know, they're not great teams. Did they really have a chance to hoist a Lombardi? Probably not. But I appreciated how much football there was, and I enjoyed it.
Who did you think was the best team you saw this weekend?
I mean, the Buffalo Bills did things that were just wild. I mean, I'm blanking on the stats because I've moved on to new stats, but it was something like no punts, no field goals, no turnovers for their offense. No punts, no field goals, no turnovers, no sacks. I mean, this is against Bill Belichick and the Patriots. They scored like 7 touchdowns in a row. I mean, how would you like to be their punter? You don't get to punt, and you don't even get to go out and hold for field goals. I mean, it was like what a wild day.
So do you think that's sustainable for them? Like, is that who – I mean, they're not going to do that every time, obviously. But is their offense that good all of a sudden? Did they just get everything clicking at the right moment? What do you make of that?
I think there's a common denominator for most of the teams still left in the playoffs, and that's like MVP quarterback play.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, pretty much it's MVP quarterback play, and then the exceptions to that might be some teams that just have an outstanding, outstanding run game and a good defense. Like the 49ers would be an example. They're not getting MVP quarterback play, but they're just running the heck out of the ball, and they're playing good defense. Tennessee, about to be one of those teams that's running the heck out of the ball, playing good defense. The Rams, I don't really know what category you'd put them into, but Cam Akers coming back and OBJ showing up and Matthew Stafford kind of getting hot. Those are like the, you know, those are the outliers. But other than that, you got Joe Burrow in Cincinnati, who is balling, breaking all kinds of records. You got an MVP quarterback in Aaron Rodgers in Green Bay. You got an MVP quarterback in Tampa Bay and Tom Brady. And then you got Mahomes and Josh Allen, who, I mean, they're as good as there ever was. So, like, I think that's kind of the common denominators of who's left.
All right, we're going to talk a little bit more about the NFL in general as we get into some rapid fire here in a little bit. But let's start here in Seattle, because we've had some moves here now in the last day or two after the big meeting. Pete's still here. That wasn't a huge surprise. And John's still here. There didn't seem to be too much news coming out of it. But Ken Norton Jr. let go yesterday, the defensive coordinator. You were around Pete. How hard do you think that was for him, just as loyal as he is?
Yeah, I think it's the hardest thing in coaching, letting go of coaches. And, you know, I was there with Kenny Norton. You know, he was there. They came in together from USC and have a history long before that. And I'm sure it was very difficult, but it's a little, and I loved Ken Norton. I loved playing there with him. He brought great energy to our team, to our pregame, to, you know, had great insights, and he's got a bunch of Super Bowl rings. But I think, you know, some of it is just putting the pieces together on your coaching staff that matches your personnel and what you're going to be and how you're going to do it, and whether that's just being a little bit more aggressive, playing a little bit more man, a little less zone. Like, those are the things that you got to look at. Are we going to be a team that's primarily a base defense team, meaning 3 linebackers on the field at the time? Or are we going to be more nickel, meaning 5 DBs on the field? Some teams are playing a lot of dime right now, which is 6 DBs on the field. You know, figuring out how that philosophy works together with your personnel, and then also what you're trying to be on offense, and then also who's in your division. Those are some of the tough decisions that need to be made. And quite honestly, like, that's what you do in an off-season review. How can we get a lot better, and how can we fix what needs to be fixed?
Yeah, it's interesting. We were just talking to Tyler Palumbis, about a half hour ago. You didn't play with him, did you? Did he come out?
I did, yeah.
Oh, you did,
yeah,
play with
him. He was way more downfield than I was on the Marshawn Lynch Beastquake run. And I'm not even sure what position he was playing at the time. I think he's a tackle by, you know, size and stature, but he might have been playing guard for us. I'm not sure.
Well, so we were talking to him and trying to figure out, he's doing some radio in Denver at our sister station there, and trying to figure out what Pete's trying to do and where he wants to go next. Not so much just the specific names, although he was talking to us about Ed Donatell, because that's one that's come up. But yeah, but also just sort of what Pete's looking to do. And his opinion after being around Pete a little bit is that Pete won't want to go with something new, won't want to go with somebody from a new system or somebody who wants to challenge him, that he's looking for somebody to communicate better the same system that Pete has always used. Is that the same sense you would get, or do you think there's some realistic opportunity here to do things a little bit differently?
Yeah, I don't think Pete would put himself in a box like that. I mean, the name Ed Donatell is exactly the type of person that I would be thinking of. A time-tested, been-there-done-it technician teacher, has a long history in this league. I mean, in fact, he was the defensive coordinator for the Green Bay Packers on the on my infamous interception to Al Harris in that wild card game. And a quick story on that, I believe it was like 3rd and 8 or something like that. And they show this blitz. It's an all-out blitz. He's a very aggressive play caller. Kind of, you've seen what they did with Vic Fangio, same kind of stuff in Denver. But very aggressive, so it's going to be an all-out cover zero blitz. I see it. I start to audible. They call timeout, okay? They call timeout. They huddle up on the sidelines. We huddle up on the sidelines. They say, hey, listen, this is Ed Donatell now. Hey, if it's all out blitz, he's going to audible to Hitches or whatever. They're going to audible three-step game. Go ahead and, you know, fire your gun, make a play. And we're over there on our sidelines saying, hey, if they audible to cover zero, let's go to our three-step. That's what we do. So, you know, really a huge assist to Ed Donatell and to that coaching staff for really being dialed in and being aggressive. I mean, a lot of defensive coordinators would be afraid to make the play in that kind of a situation because it's a little bit feast or famine, right? You got to sort of educate, guess right. And anyway, he was that defensive coordinator. He was in Green Bay. when I was there, he's a really, really well-respected coach. And you're going to get a lot of those types of names, I'm sure. This is a coveted job to be with Pete and to, you know, have that crowd noise behind you. So, you know, I mean, who knows if he's really in the mix there or not. I don't know. But I've got a ton of respect for him as a coach.
How about Gus Bradley? You were around him, I know, right, for a short amount of time. What did you make of Gus?
Yeah, I love Gus. You know, same thing. He's time tested in terms of, you know, what he is. He's a little more the Monty Kiffin Tampa Bay scheme, which is, you know, Tampa 2. When you play zone, it's fire zone. He's playing a lot more man than he's played in Las Vegas. Again, like similar, I would say similar to what the Seahawks have been in the past scheme-wise in terms of, hey, we're going to get a pass rush with four. We're going to get a little exotic on 3rd and 7+. But if it's not 3rd and 7+, you're going to pretty much know what we're doing defensively. We're just going to do it really, really well. But again, I don't know that X's and O's is really what I think Pete will go for. I think it's going to be a little bit more the person, the teaching, the technique, the experience, how quickly and moldable and adaptable are they to in-game adjustments? How moldable are they to the personnel? Quite honestly, the personnel in Seattle is a little unique. You know, you have one safety that is really a great pass rusher, but that's about it. So you need to get him, you know, you need to get him pass rushing and not stuck in man coverage too much. You know what I mean? Stuff like that. So, yeah,
there for a moment. Let me kind of follow up there because that's been one of the things we've talked about here for the last couple of days. Any interview with a new defensive coordinator here, one of the first questions has to be, how are you going to handle Jamal Adams and how are you going to get the most out of this enormous investment that the team has made, both in terms of draft picks and in terms of money? How do you answer? What's the right answer to that question?
Well, that's the thing. Like, Pete Carroll's the guy I ask. Like, that's a conversation between two guys that know X's and O's. And everybody they bring in for these conversations is going to be smart enough, intelligent enough, and experienced enough on the X's and O's of it. Hey, here are the coverages that you can play. You can play man, you can play zone, you can play single high, you can play two high. To me, it's not so much that as it is a general philosophy of how are we going to create turnovers? How are we going to get the ball back? You know, that's the other thing that you look at, you know, just the turnover differential of the teams that did well this year and the teams that didn't do well, the teams that are at home right now. You know, it's obviously protecting the football. Yeah, obviously. That's part of it. Well, guess what? It's a team sport. And so, you know, going right with, like, protecting the football is like, hey, defense, you're allowed to go get turnovers. You're allowed to go create them yourself. And the best defenses, you saw it in Dallas this year with Dan Quinn. It wasn't that their numbers were so great, but they were just getting the ball. Like, they were just getting the football. And it probably made them seem like a way better team than they really were. You know, we're over here, so a lot of people are picking them to go to the Super Bowl because they're first in their division. Were they really that great of a team? Or did they have a defense that was not only getting the ball, but scoring on defense? So I think it's more than the X's and O's of it. It's going to be a general philosophy of, hey, okay, who are our playmakers and how do we put them in a position to have this mindset where we're going to be aggressive and we're going to go try to get the football. And if you get that right, then I think like the X's and O's of it, you can be whatever you decide you want to be.
Yeah, I mean, I think I saw the Seahawks had fewer turnovers caused this year than in any time in their history, right? So just they're not.
which would just be nails on a chalkboard right. To Pete Carroll.
It's antithetical to what Pete wants to do. And then maybe one of the reasons that we saw the moves made yesterday with Ken Norton and Andre Curtis, who was the passing game coordinator as well. You know, one of the questions.
And in fairness to those, to Ken especially, he's like, well, what else? You got to change something.
Yep.
So you're not going to change the offense because you just changed the offense. What are the options? You got to do something. You can't really change some of the players because of cap stuff. So, right.
And maybe this came from Jody. I mean, they just had this meeting last week. Maybe some of this comes from above of, hey, what are you going to do that's different, right? You can't just come back to me with the same plan and do the same thing again. What are you going to do differently? And maybe this is one of the things that gets decided on in a meeting like that.
Yeah, you're probably right.
One of the things I hear about this defense is that over time it has not evolved, right? Dan Quinn ran this defense, but that he's evolved it in Atlanta and then in Dallas. Gus Bradley ran this defense, but has evolved it in San Diego and then in LA with the Chargers, and then in Vegas. What does this defense need to be evolved, or does it just need to be communicated differently?
I think it needs to be executed better. And we talked all year about you want to fix a lot of your problems, just get a great pass rush. And I think back to the Legion of Boom, and yeah, they were playing great, but part of that defense was a great pass rush as well. And then it gets contagious that way. I think the pass rush thing, a consistent pass rush, a four-man rush, even a three-man rush, that's a real factor. The other thing, I've mentioned it kind of all year. I know there was a little bit of a disagreement of opinion, but line up and play in the secondary and have your assignment correct. Sometimes disguising can get you in a little bit of trouble. To me, on film, I think what I've seen, if I go back and I watch the big plays against the Seahawks, I feel like a little bit of over disguise. So that's something, eliminating big plays and stuff like that. But again, I think execution and just being a little bit, just tighten the screws a little bit. Guys are in position to make plays. They just weren't making plays when they needed to.
Well, when I hear you say that, I mean, that sounds like a pretty good argument in favor of a name like Clint Hurt, who's already on the staff, or even an Ed Donatell, both of whom are really known for their communication and maybe, have relationship with Pete and don't need to come in and make a tremendous amount of changes. It sounds a little bit more like keep the status quo, but do it better.
There's just something awesome for a player, and I don't know what it was like this year, so I can't speak to that, but there's just something awesome for a player to be coached hard. And to really feel like looking, from the beginning of the year to the end of the year and saying to yourself, like, wow, it wasn't always easy and it wasn't always fun. But, like, I got so much better as a player this year. And we got so much better as a unit this year. And so whatever group of people or whoever can take this unit to that level where guys are having the best years of their career, young players are now not playing like young players. They're playing like savvy vets. That's kind of what you're looking for as a player.
I love that, and that's how I felt when I was a kid. I mean, just basketball coaches in high school or whatever. Like, I loved being coached like that. When I talk to Brock about what he sees in the college football world, et cetera, everything I hear from him especially is the opposite, that you can't do that the same way anymore, that maybe, our generation loved that, but that the next generation of players maybe doesn't want that the same way.
There's certain coaches, coaching staff, that have a culture and a DNA that their resume allows them to still do that. Mm-hmm. I think of the Patriots, and no one questions anything Bill Belichick says building. No one questions Andy Reid. I don't think anyone's going to question Pete Carroll in Seattle. No one's questioning Mike Vrabel. Mike Vrabel's got the most old school football practices you've ever seen in your life. He's got coaches out there with bags doing forearm shivers on Derrick Henry. He's got the GM out there with boxing gloves on, punching AJ Brown as he's walking walking through like ladder drills and like literally just trying to get the ball out. I mean, there's culture and DNA, and it's just like, hey, this is how we do things. We're not here to coddle you here. We're not here to coddle you. We're here to hoist something. And if you want to hoist something, and that's a Lombardi, here's our vision to how to get it done. And I think that's completely doable in the NFL. College might be a little different because of the transfer portal and mommy and daddy and all that stuff. That's completely, I think guys buy into that in the NFL if you've got a leader who's setting that culture everywhere in the building.
Yeah. Let me turn to the offensive side of the ball, and as we talk to Matt Hasselbeck, as we do Wednesdays here at 9 o'clock, good hour with Matt and the Matt Hasselbeck Show. We were talking to Albert Breer yesterday, and he mentioned something that I've heard him say before. Essentially, you know, it's the very, I'll just play 10 seconds here, but it's the very last thing he says that I think is interesting.
I think the hedging from Russ's camp is not a great sign. Now, we'll see if they can work something out, but, you know, there's been an acknowledgement for a while that this could be the last contract he'll do with the team.
An acknowledgement that this could be the last contract he would do with the team. If that's the case, you're looking at two more years with Russ. The reason I bring it up is to ask the question, can you win a Super Bowl with this roster, et cetera, within the next 2 years? Because the answer to that question probably dictates a lot of what else you do this offseason.
I think there's a real danger in looking at, like, the next 2 years, or I want to win three more Super Bowls. Like, there's a danger in that. Like, there's a saying, be where your feet are. Like, the biggest game is the next game. Like, those are cliches, but I just think that's the best way to approach everything. I was with the Colts at the end of my career, and, you know, one of the things that they said there that really bothered me was like, oh, we're going to win multiple championships with Andrew Luck. It's like, let's get one. let's get one. You know, it's the reason at halftime when you're down 14-0, a lot of great coaches, I've heard them say in the locker room, hey, there's no such thing as a 14-point touchdown. Okay, let's not talk about how we're going to get our next two touchdowns. Let's talk about how we're going to get a touchdown, you know, and that starts with a first down, and that starts with a positive play. Like, so I don't know. Maybe I'm old school that way, but
I don't think so. I think what you say makes a lot of sense. But while thinking that, don't you, somebody also have to be looking at it realistically and saying, all right, if we don't think Russ is going to be back after two more years, and if we don't think that we've got the horses to turn into a Super Bowl team in that time, do you start thinking about a deal in order to get to the Super Bowl the soonest, which is, as far as I know, the goal of every team, right? What's the quickest path to get to a Super Bowl?
This team has the talent in my mind. I mean, think about it, right? If Tennessee makes the Super Bowl this year, we'd be like, oh, okay, right. You know, 49ers could beat anybody. If they beat Green Bay this year, it'd be like, yeah, okay, the 49ers, the Green Bay can't beat the 49ers. Like, I get it. Well, the Seahawks, this sort of bad version of the Seahawks this year that won seven games, two of those were against the 49ers, right? And Tennessee, they really should have won that game. Just do your job on defense and don't give up a 70-yard run, and the game's yours. They can beat anybody. They just have to play better with the players that they have. Sure, will they improve talent? Will they maybe tighten the screws a little bit on technique? Yeah, but this idea that you would like start, I don't know, rebuilding or something like that, like that seems foolish.
Good. Then I think that's really instructive. I think I tend to agree with you. I don't think they're that far away, despite kind of a rough year record wise this year. If that's the case, you know, you kind of have this window here. Well, not only Russ is here, but he's in the prime of his career. Would it cause you to maybe go a little bit more all in on trying to bring some bigger names, free agents? You mentioned the pass rush. Chandler Jones a real possibility this offseason if you're the Seahawks?
I mean, you're definitely looking for somebody that can rush the passer situationally in a very, very consistent manner. But for me, like, I think I would start with how do we take the guys on our team currently and how do we help them play better, the better version of themselves? You know, obviously I love Russ, but I don't think he had a great year personally. You know, I mentioned it earlier, like this was a 7-10 team. If he just plays to his potential, it's a 10-7 team right there with adding no people. Mm-hmm. And I could say the same thing for other people on that team. So just focus on that real quick And all of a sudden, you're 10-7. You're in now. You're in the playoffs. Like, you're still playing. You're not sitting at home posting Instagram videos of your workouts. You're playing if you just get your current guys playing better.
Yeah, I think I'll just argue on behalf of a lot of the listeners that we talk to all the time here who say, yeah, we've seen that for the last half a decade or so, maybe more. We don't want to go 10-7 and exit in the first or second round of the playoffs. We miss going to Super Bowls, right? It was 7 years ago yesterday with the 2014 NFC Championship game. It was 8 years ago today that Aaron Andrews asked Richard Sherman who was talking about him. They want to get back to that level of being one of the truly dominant teams in the league.
Yeah. Yeah. So then you got to do what basically, if you look at the divisional round of the playoffs, like I was saying, all these teams have something in common. They either have a quarterback that's playing like an MVP, Burrow, Aaron Rodgers, Tom Brady, Stafford, Patrick Mahomes, Josh Allen. Mm-hmm. Okay, they either have that, or you have a dominant run game and a very, very good defense, which I would put the 49ers in that category right now. And I don't know where to put the Rams right now. Like they're
kind
of
in the dominant defensive category. I mean, I know the offense does some things, but my God, they just ran roughshod over the Cardinals offense, I thought, on Monday night.
Yeah. Yeah. I think I've just got to, I've seen them get just, you know, if someone's going to commit to the run against mm-hmm. the Rams, then the Rams have a little bit of an issue. But yeah. So listen, that to me, Seattle can be in that mix, but you're going to need one of those two things. You're going to need MVP type play out of your quarterback. And, or you got to get your defense playing like the Legion of Boom that you're talking about. Or have that Marshawn Lynch type commitment to the run game the way that the 49ers do right now. And they're doing it creatively. They don't have that Marshawn Lynch. So they said, you know what? We're going to take Deebo Samuel and we're going to make him our best running back. And then they did it. So, I mean, I think Seattle's right there. And I'm saying 7-10 to 10-7. That's just if you fix the guys on your team.
Right. That's never mind if you guys.
Yeah. Or draft well or go get free agents, make a trade that fits your roster, fits your new scheme defensively. You know, that type of thing.
How good is Deebo Samuel, by the way?
He's incredible, and he's incredible just as a wide receiver. Never mind the fact that he's the best running back on their team. And then, oh, by the way, in that second Rams game, he also threw a touchdown pass. It's like on Jalen Ramsey, no less.
And did you see him talking to the kid from Nickelodeon after the game the other day? It was great. He totally handled it like a pro. Like, young kid was asking him questions, and he treated him like an adult. It was awesome. I love Deebo Samuel.
Yeah. No, it was great. And I think that's part of the reason why some people are really looking at the 49ers, a team that didn't have a great season necessarily. You know, they were 10-7, but they're going to Green Bay, a team that they have really shown that they are more physical than every time that they've played. And it's Kyle Shanahan against essentially, you know, little brother in LaFleur. And when you have those guys that know each other really, really well as you know, head coaches going up against each other, who knows what could happen. And so you go back to the last matchup of Green Bay and San Fran. It came down to a Aaron Rodgers heroic 2-minute throw. And ironically, because we're talking umpires and Dak Prescott and all that, probably the most impressive play I've seen all year was the 40-yard dash time of the umpire in the Green Bay Packers versus the San Francisco 49ers game. Run down there 36 yards or whatever it was and place the ball so that Aaron Rodgers could get the spike off to win the game. So that's a heck of a game. And if the 49ers could beat Green Bay, look out.
All right, there you go. There's Matt Hasselbeck, who joins us every Wednesday at 9 o'clock here during the football season. Really love his analysis and his view on what he sees in football. Matt's just so smart, so much experience. With all of that said, and I know that I'm taking my own life into my hands here, but I'm going to disagree with Matt. He said something in there about the future of the Seahawks that I can't quite let it go. I was thinking about it last night, and I just flat out disagree with him. So I'll tell you what it is and why. Next, Mike Salk Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.